all we wanted was a bigger, healthier tomato. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that always knew salad was a threat to human health. Now, we don't get to review many comedies on the Exploding Helicopter podcast, but that's where our journey through films where helicopters explode takes us today. And even more unusually, we're looking at a film from the 1970s, a decade we don't get many opportunities to dip into. So on this show, we're reviewing the low-budget comedy Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. And talking of cheap laughs, my guest today is Nick Rehack. Welcome back, Nick. It's been too long.
It has been, man. I appreciate you inviting me back.
So, yeah, I thought, you know, I just literally had nowhere else to go, Nick. So, you know. I'd been through my podcasting telephone directory, and then I was like, oh, damn, back round to Rehack.
Let me spin the Rolodex again. Oh, man, it's back to him again.
But, you know, Nick, I am genuinely glad that you are here. But before we go any further, you know, we've got an important age-old question to answer. So do you say tomato or do you say tomato?
I say tomato.
Oh, God. I think we might need to call this off right now.
I set them up, you knock them down.
Oh, yeah. But now we've settled that important question. There was another thing, another aspect I wanted to ask you about, because I know people have strong views on this. And basically, it's tomatoes and where you stand on them. Because, you know, I used to have a girlfriend who just wouldn't eat fresh tomatoes under any circumstances. You know, my mum won't eat the skin on tomatoes. So I kind of, you know, wondered, you know, are you one of these people who, you know, you get a burger and the first thing you do is flip off the bun and haul out the sliced tomato that's inside?
I do not do that because I ahead of time ask them for no tomato. I enjoy spaghetti sauce. I enjoy pizza sauce. I enjoy tomatoes in a sauce format, salsa. But as a tomato as a whole, I don't know what it is, but I find them a little too acidic and it just doesn't hit my taste buds right now. Maybe it's not as fresh a tomato as it could be. My father grows them in his yard, and he's always like, have this one, and I'll try it. And it just – it doesn't do anything for me. Now, there's plenty of people in my family that can just slice a tomato, throw it on a piece of bread, and just eat it. No problem whatsoever. My grandmother can easily eat it like an apple, and I don't understand it. I don't think I ever will understand it. Now, if I were to get something like – I don't know, like a quesadilla from a local place, and there's like tomatoes and onions and peppers already in the mix. For some reason, that's fine. So I guess there's plenty of other flavors to counteract it. But if it's a slice of tomato as a whole or just taste the acidity of it, just I can't do it.
So raw naked tomato, no. But, you know, if it's been processed, you know, a little bit of salt, sugar, some additives, you know, some other kind of artificial food horror has been added to tomatoes, you're perfectly fine with that.
That's true. I guess I'm eating an American tomato.
Well, I can't imagine, you know, if you're having these types of problems with tomatoes already, I can't imagine that this film did much for your relationship with that particular fruit. But before we get into all of that, I think it's time we had a listen to the trailer. So let's hear a deep male voice authoritatively describe the peril facing the world.
Lives are shattered. The nation is in chaos. Death and destruction sweeps the country. Foursquare Productions presents perhaps the funniest film ever made.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. You've never seen a film like it. This is the incredible story of the world's ultimate disaster. Vicious man-eating tomatoes grow to monstrous proportions. Faced with this unprecedented menace, the president calls upon Mason Dixon, special agent. Aided by his trusty sidekick, Dixon begins to unravel the terrifying mystery of the deadly tomatoes. Dixon is getting close, too close for someone or something. Who could it be? The girl reporter? The ad executive? The press secretary? Or does it go higher? Join Mason Dixon in a race against time as he battles to save the world from the threat of nature's perfect eating machine, the killer tomato.
Ain't no time to make a fuss. Gotta get those tomatoes.
After a wave of mysterious attacks involving people being eaten by the traditionally docile fruit, a special government task force is set up to investigate the new violent fruit phenomenon and put a stop to their murderous spree. Included in this crack team are a lieutenant who never goes anywhere without his parachute, an underwater expert who's never out of his scuba gear, and a master of disguise who conceals his appearance by dressing as a black Adolf Hitler. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes came out in 1978. It was a low-budget film that was made for under $100,000 and made by a cast of largely non-professional actors. It was marketed as a musical comedy horror, although it's more of a sort of spoof of 1950s sci-fi movies to my eyes. The film received, it's fair to say, pretty dreadful reviews when it was released, with Variety declaring that the film wasn't even worthy of sarcasm. The film has a 4.7 user rating on IMDb and a 42% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. How apt. Over the years, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes has earned a cult status, so much so that we've now had three sequels: 1988's Return of the Killer Tomatoes, Killer Tomatoes Strike Back in 1990, and the gloriously named Killer Tomatoes Eat France in 1991. So with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
It's something else for sure. It's super goofy. I had a lot of fun with it. I don't think it's something that I'll revisit often, but if it's something that happens to be on, or, you know, a bunch of us at a party and we just want to watch a movie and just talk trash the whole time, I think it's something I'll definitely suggest. But I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. My only problem is it starts off really strong. It's consistent with the parody and the comedy, and just it keeps that level of goofiness, almost like a like Leslie Nielsen in the Naked Gun films, like kind of those little one-off little jokes, a little absurdist. But as soon as I want to say it's like, I don't know, a half hour in or so, this character Mason Dixon and his sidekick, they get to this hotel where they're staying as the events unfold in the film. And I think from there, it just kind of loses its way. And it just becomes just nonsensical. It adds elements that I don't really think it needs to add. It kind of loses the mark, and it switches to, I guess it tries to be more of an action, and it loses that like comedic wit that was there presently, or was there before. And I think the ending's a little weak personally, but obviously we can talk about that when we get to there. But overall, I dug it more than I thought I would.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you're a bit warmer on this film than I am. I mean, I found this a pretty trying watch, to be honest. I think I agree with you. Like the beginning of the film is definitely stronger, and or perhaps I just became a bit worn out by the film, the sort of more that it went on. And you mentioned something I thought was very apt. I mean, it did remind me of like Airplane and those Abraham Zucker films, in the sense of, you know, you've got short scenes that, you know, it's all, the whole plot is very loose. The scenes themselves are pretty sort of loose, have a loose relationship to the plot. And, you know, you've got visual gags, a little bit of verbal wordplay, and very broad slapstick comedy that's at play there. And it does keep up, I think definitely early on in the film, it keeps up a decent pace. So if some of the gags don't land, then, you know, there's another one coming up that might tickle your fancy a bit more. But I mean, the film's not even 90 minutes long, but I did start to get, you know, a bit sort of antsy about 40 minutes into this film, because it was definitely starting to sag by then, for me anyway.
Absolutely. And I think some of the jokes they tried to add, it just felt forced towards the end. It felt like, you know, hey, we're missing the jokes, we're missing how goofy it was, and we need to try to get back to that. And some of it just falls flat. There's a musical number about an hour in with some soldiers that kind of pick up the film a little bit more, but then it starts to fall flat again. There's a scene with the newscaster that just kind of falls flat. The car chase sequence, I think, misses the mark just the slightest bit. I think it's just a lot of missteps in that second half. And it's a bummer because that first 30 is just so strong. I mean, when they have the meeting in that tiny, tiny conference room, like that whole moment is funny. Like the entire scene is funny, even when they get to like the Jaws parody or, you know, they get to the reporters and everything. Even when it gets absurd with like they have for some bizarre reason, like the motorcycle race going on, it still holds. But it just slowly – they introduce these characters and you're like, well, nothing really happens with them. They're just kind of like ho-hum. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it did strike me as if, you know, maybe literally every idea they had went into this film. And, you know, there wasn't anything that was left on the cutting room floor because – the variability of the jokes was pretty noticeable. And you know, some of the scenes, as you say, the motorcycle race, just completely random. It's just like somebody had an idea and just thought, okay, yep, we're filming that. And you know, it didn't feel like there was necessarily a big master plan for the movie or even any kind of plan. You know, it just felt like you know, they maybe just sort of sat down the night before, kind of, you know, sketched out a few scenes and then shot them the next day without really sort of worrying too much about the how the whole thing was really going to fit together.
Yeah. And they try to add some subplots in there by breaking off and following some of the other characters, but it just it doesn't land. And some of them are kind of left unknown. Like you said, we have the guy who's a master of disguise. He infiltrates the camp of the Tomatoes. He has a bit of a gaffe, and all of a sudden he's just gone. Now, obviously, you know, he's been killed by them, but, you know, we don't see it happen. We don't see how. We kind of miss out on that. The whole thing with this assassin coming through, you know what I mean, trying to stop him. Mm-hmm. I think that falls apart. I think the reporter Lois, that just kind of falls flat, and there's no real point to her character being there. I think they took it in directions that they thought were going to work, but it ends up not working and they're stuck with what they got. They can't really change or add anything or subtract anything. I'd have to agree with you where they're just kind of throwing pen and paper the night before and then trying to make it work the next day.
Well, you just mentioned something there that I thought was definitely something I wanted to ask you about, which was, you know, how did you think, you know, what did you make of how the film showed the tomato threat and how that was presented in the film? So we got, you know, we see these tomatoes, you know, they're attacking people, they're attacking vehicles, you know, they're attacking helicopters, which we're going to kind of get onto later. But, you know, for me, I kind of was a bit disappointed with, you know, how they portrayed that type of that side of the equation, because, you know, I was expecting to see, you know, somebody kind of like covered in tomato ketchup at some point in the film after being, you know, savaged by some of these killer tomatoes. And it felt like the film really missed a trick in exploiting the potential of man versus tomato.
Oh, absolutely. I think in the beginning it was kind of funny how it's just these little tomatoes and they're rolling through and, you know, we're being goofy, but they just kind of get bigger. They don't really develop. They don't really evolve. And I think there's a lot of missed opportunity. They could have had something like the tomatoes in Alabama are turning into this. The tomatoes in Ohio are turning into that. Kind of play on some cultural or regional jokes here in the States. About how, you know, like the South, like the tomatoes in the South could have been inbred, you know what I mean? Just something like that, or even a character that gets eaten. Maybe the Master of Disguise, he gets eaten, and or just something happens, and now he's like this half-man, half-tomato character. Just something a little more creative, or like some kind of practical effect where they're like growing like teeth or just something, but instead they just kind of get bigger and nothing really comes of it.
I did think that the way in which some of the tomatoes, once they get bigger, that they roll after the humans or the people in this film, I did think some of that was actually done quite well. And I was actually wondering how it was done. I mean, I don't know if you've got any ideas on that, but I did think, you know, when we see people being chased by tomatoes, some of that was actually done quite well. But you know, I just really felt like, I mean, I know this is a really super low budget film, but I mean, surely it wouldn't have cost too much to get hold of some, you know, red gunk that they could have, you know, thrown about and just sort of given it a sort of a slightly sort of horror splatter gore type feel, just, you know, at least on a few occasions.
I think what they do is they probably didn't want to waste the tomatoes, so they don't squish them. They don't come up with some kind of – but even then, they could have just done – like just gotten bottles and bottles of ketchup, just squirted them all over people and made it work, or even get cans of like chopped or diced tomatoes and throw it on somebody, something. I think what they do effects-wise is really smart. It looks like a lot of scenes like tomatoes were just thrown at people. But then they reverse the shot to make it look like, you know, they're running away or they're trying to attack somebody here and there. I think the bigger tomatoes end up being on some kind of dolly and they're just kind of pushed along in a direction that makes it look like there's going to attack. There's a particular scene where one of the bigger tomatoes is chasing after somebody, gets closer and closer and closer to the camera. And then finally the camera just kind of pauses a little bit. And then it goes to the next scene, and I'm thinking that this tomato just came in, bang, and hit the camera. But rather than show that, they – which would have been funny. I think that would have been really funny if it hits the camera and the camera guy falls to the side or something, like a bit of that fourth wall break or like a wink and a nod. I think that would have added. But instead, we just get that weird freeze frame and then on to the next shot of somebody else being attacked. But I think there's just a lot of opportunity and possibility, and they just weren't worried about it. I think they just wanted to get through the story and do edits best as they could. I mean, even when they cut away to like the Senate stuff where they're having their like, meeting or hearing, and it could have just been done. So much more could have been done and added.
Yeah, and maybe some of that comes down to the fact that most of the people involved in making this film just didn't have a sort of track record in making movies. I mean, I was looking at the actors who played the main parts. I was looking at the people who directed and produced this film. And literally, for a lot of them, this is like the only thing that they ever did. I think that may just the fact that essentially this film seems to have been put together by willing amateurs, people without any kind of track record or history in making films. And I think that maybe contributes probably to some of the sort of creative shortcomings that that we see up on screen. But there are sort of a couple of other interesting points about this film in that we do get several musical numbers within this film. And music does actually play a very important part in this movie, in the sense that the one thing that can stop the killer tomatoes is a kind of parody of I'm guessing it's Donny Osmond. There's this dreadful sort of teenage ballad called Puberty Love, which is a parody of those kind of like 70s sort of teen centric songs that sort of Donny Osmond was made a speciality out of. But we do actually get a couple of like musical numbers where the action just pauses, and we get a classical 30s, 40s or 50s, you know, kind of golden era musical number in the middle of the film. And what did you make of those particular moments, Nick?
I enjoyed them a lot, like way more than I thought. In the beginning, when the speaker for the White House has that meeting, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy for Mindmaker, how he just breaks into the song about how he knows how to advertise to people, he knows what to sell. And it felt, like you said, something out of the 40s or the 50s, and it worked just like a one-on-one kind of song. Then we have what I assumed they wanted to be their show-stopping number about an hour in with the soldiers. I mean, they do a whole chorus line and choreograph, and I liked it. I wish they would have gone a little more embellishment. I'm serious, dude. I wish they would have embellished a little bit more, like some kind of like fireworks or lighting display or just bigger cast of extras behind them doing some dancing and stuff. But it felt great. It reminded me a lot of the Mel Brooks films and the musical numbers they did, like in Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Obviously not as good and perfected and funny, but there's, again, it's so much possibility with this film, and it just kind of falls short. The musical numbers, though, for me are a highlight. That Puberty Love song is very unfortunate, and I can't stand it, but the other two numbers are great. Like, I'm all for it. I wish they would have thrown one more in there, but I'm happy we got what we got.
Well, I think you liked them a bit more than I did, but the one song that we do get in this film that I really, really enjoyed, and that was the song that plays over the title credits at the start of the film, which I thought the lyrics for that were very good, and I thought also the music was very good for that that song as well.
I would agree. It feels a little Bondy, which I like, especially James Bond, I should say, not just Bondy like that, but especially how it's literally you were just looking at a plate of glass with like tomatoes being thrown at it. And a lot of those James Bond intros, it's like, you know, shadowy and colorful with like, you know, the different women dancing or gunshots and stuff like that or something.
Yeah.
Relating to the
sort
plot.
Of swaying around. Yeah.
So I kind of got a bit of a vibe, and then it also reminded me a whole lot of the title sequence for Monty Python and the Holy Grail, especially when it gets to parts of like the sale at the furniture place or this space available. Now, I will say this. When it did say this space available and had that phone number, I called that phone number just to see if it's still – it's not. It just says this number is no longer in service and it hung up on me.
How disappointing that 42 years after the film came out that that phone number was no longer active. But I did wonder, though, about the credits. Like, is this – you know, I was trying to think of a film because the credits in this film are like deliberately comedic. So, you know, and you see that, you know, quite a bit in movies that, you know, more recent movies, things like I think the Jump Street films have got comedy credits on them and stuff like that. But I was wondering, you know, I was trying to think of a film that came out before this that had comedy credits, and I certainly can't think of one. I don't know if you're aware of somebody else doing it at an earlier date.
Not offhand. Well, it would have been Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That came out in 1975, and this came out like 2-3 years later. So outside of that, no, I can't. Well, I should say I can't think of any like bigger mainstream film that would have had, you know, comedy credits or something a little goofy. But because obviously Monty Python, that's more of a cult following. And then obviously this is definitely a cult film for sure. But I can't outside of these two, I can't really think of anything that was jokey back in like the 70s or even the 60s. Maybe there's like an old Woody Allen film, like when he would do like Bananas or Tiger Lily or something like that. But I haven't seen those films in a while, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, it sounds like we'll have to do some research on that particular point. But we briefly touched on the kind of conclusion, the big climax of this movie. You mentioned that you found it a little bit disappointing. Is that right?
I did, yeah. I do like how in the montage of going back and forth between like the military and then marching onto the stadium, how again they have like the sales banner on the bottom, and then eventually it seems that they are attacked by the tomatoes as well. But it just, I don't know. It just falls flat for me. Like, I get it and I understand the point, and it's goofy and everybody's, you know, joking around. It picks up when Mason Dixon and Lois kind of have this like fling that just kind of happens out of nowhere and a very bizarro song that they lip sync to. But it just, I don't know. I wanted more of a big explosive ending and not kind of the meandering stomp that we got. Like, I don't want to see random people's feet and toes in like weird socks or shoes or everything. Like, I wanted something just a little bit more.
Yeah, I want to see, I don't know, somebody blow up like a really massive, like the Mothership tomato or something. I want to see them blow that up. As you say, I don't want to see people stomping on very unripe tomatoes. That was a detail that I noticed. There were some very green tomatoes that people were stomping on there. Although, in fairness to this film, which, as we mentioned, very low budget production, they did have an impressive number of extras at that finale. So I don't,
they sure,
you know,
did.
That I you know, I salute them for managing to, you know, rope in that many people and then organize them on a film set. That can't have been easy. So I appreciate the effort that they went to at least give some sense of scale at the end of the movie here.
Absolutely, and definitely keeping those tight shots to make it seem like there was way more people than there were definitely gets creative and adds to that low budgetness. But now that you mention it, it does kind of stick out, and it's gross that they were not as ripe, and it starts to become this like red green, like mucousy mush almost. But maybe that's part of it too, that when they shrink down, like some of them unripen. So maybe in a weird way, it's, you know, part of the science.
Well, before we wrap up this part of the show, have you got any final thoughts or points you want to make about this film?
I will say this. The beginning of the film caught me off guard. I expected it to look worse than it did. I mean, I don't know if it's just in some bizarre way it's HD or something like that, or a scan's been done from like the original negatives, but it looks kind of good from a film presentation standpoint. I expected something a little more like lesser in quality, like kind of VHS low budget, but some of the scenes don't look bad. And I mean, the sound quality is horrendous, but it is, it just looks good, especially during the musical numbers. Like, it really pops in a weird, like, 70s way.
No, I would agree with you there. It, it does look a lot better than you would necessarily think for a film this old, and certainly for a film of this budget. So, I think obviously somebody took care of that negative, and, it's now, looks like it's been decently preserved, so people will get to enjoy this film's dubious pleasures for many years to come. I think it's out on Blu-ray, so the 4K restoration can only be around the corner.
I'm not gonna lie, if they did come out with that, I'd probably buy it.
Oh my god. Okay, we're gonna take a short break, and when we come back, we're gonna be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs near the start of the film as the police are battling an assault by the tomatoes. A helicopter, a Hillier UH-12E, comes into land when it's attacked by some of the tomatoes. We see the chopper spinning round wildly before it crashes into the ground and explodes. So, Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
This caught me off guard. Big time. I think this is one of the earliest instances of an exploding helicopter in a film that I've seen. But when the helicopter comes flying in, and all of a sudden the back tail there kind of smacks the ground, and the propellers break off, I was like, what is happening? He came in way too hot, way too excited. And next thing we know, dust on the ground. We turn around. We don't get to see an explosion. Disappointing. But it's just on fire. It's molted. And I wish we would have seen like some more tomato-y. I want to see the tomatoes around it. I want to see the devastation from these quote unquote kamikaze tomatoes. But my goodness, I kind of got a little scared. I'm not gonna lie. I'm like, I don't know if this was intentional or not intentional, but either way, he came in hot. He came in hot.
Well, Nick, I can answer your question, because this helicopter, the reason it came in hot was because the person piloting this helicopter was not in control of it. So that helicopter wasn't meant to crash. So the reason it's spinning wildly is because the pilot has lost control. The helicopter did actually crash. luckily nobody was injured. The pilot was unharmed, walked away. But then the people producing this film basically hastily wrote in the helicopter crash, they wrote it into the film. And, you know, we have a little bit of dialogue after it crashes with, you know, some characters going, oh my God, did you see that? You know, the tomatoes attacked the helicopter. And that was all spur of the moment stuff in the wake of having this helicopter actually crash unintentionally in the middle of the film set. So obviously the helicopter was meant to be there, but it wasn't meant to crash. So a bit of hasty improvisation to kind of write that into the film.
Well, the improvisation worked because there's a line. I think it's something like, how bad is it? Or what's the situation? And then the guy looks over the helicopter. He's like, well, that's not going to fly again. And it's that misdirection that you would get from, like I said before, like a Naked Gun type film. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, it was meant to happen that way. So good on them for writing on the fly and making it stick instead of, you know, going the way, you know, the second half of the film did, where something just didn't, I mean, obviously this helicopter didn't land, but a joke didn't land or fell flat. Like, they rolled with it and made it successful.
Yeah, we have to salute the kind of quick thinking of the crew who were making this film for sort of, yeah, incorporating that into the action. I do think we have to, I mean, I guess we need to cut the film a little bit of slack, but as exploding helicopter purists, we do need to point out the fact that we don't actually get to see the helicopter explode. We just get to see the sort of the wreckage after it has exploded. So points definitely deducted for that. But given the circumstances in terms of, hey, this helicopter was never meant to crash in the first place, and given the fact this is a low budget film, I think we can sort of, forgive the filmmakers for not showing us that. But all credit to them for, you know, taking advantage of these circumstances and thinking, you know what, we can now put an exploding helicopter in the middle of this film.
And I think what works, though, is we don't see the explosion. We just cut away to reaction shots. I mean, that whole opening after the credits, it's all reaction shots of, like, what is it, the elderly couple watching, assumedly, this tomato, like, roll down the street and, you know, eat a child and everything. And anytime there's this big action piece, we just cut to somebody reacting to it. So it's still within the film and what the film accomplishes as far as, like, you know, not showing the death and destruction until, like, towards the end of the film. But I wish there would have been an explosion, or at least, like, a lot of tomato just everywhere. Just something to visually give us more because we don't have the explosion.
Just if you are a exploding helicopter fact fan, there is there is sort of one other detail I just thought might be interesting to point out for any fellow geeks out there, which is that this is not the only film in which you actually get to see a lot of a real helicopter crash or explode in. So in the film Charlie Wilson's War with Tom Hanks, that film does include archive footage of three helicopters getting blown up during the Russian war in Afghanistan. So you do get to see some real helicopters explode in there. So it's a slightly strange experience to watch an exploding helicopter in a film and know that somebody has just died in that explosion. It's a little bit, too much like watching a snuff film for me, Nick.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I can understand if it's a documentary and, you know, it's unfortunate, but you kind of have to show something like that to get the point across or to, I guess, show proof of that happening. But to throw in a film like that, like, that's, I don't know how I feel about that. It's I don't like that.
Yeah, it was a strange decision because they do include some CGI helicopters that explode, which sort of make the point. I don't really know what including the archive footage ones really added to the film. So a strange decision. But, you know, you can watch Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, you can watch a real helicopter crash, and you can watch it safe in the knowledge that, no one was harmed in the making of it, which I think, you know, it's just a better experience all round for, you know, the casual viewer and certainly for the exploding helicopter aficionados among us.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, do you want to take a moment to sort of plug anything you are up to online?
Outside of this podcast, I was recently on Movies, Flicks, and Films, hosted by Mark Hoffmeyer. We had a jet ski movie draft. We took a look at films that feature jet ski scenes and talked about them. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to talk about Doom 2, a film that we talked about on this podcast with the jet ski exploding out of the river.
Yeah. Great jet ski sequence at the beginning of that film.
Absolutely wonderful, and I was so disappointed after the show when it clicked, like, oh my goodness, how could I forget something like that? Also recently, the Lambcast, Jay, the former host now, he has left the show, and there was a big to-do. A lot of people came on and said their goodbyes. I hopped on there and read a poem that I wrote him, so if you get a chance to check that out, give it a listen, and have a non-movie-related chuckle.
As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website. That's explodinghelicopter.com. If you can rate, review, or retweet us, we'd be very grateful. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Let's shoot it from over there, huh, Bill? Come on over here, lady. Stand by over here for just a minute, huh? Okay, don't go away. We start with a tight shot, huh, Bill? Tell me when you're ready. Don't run off. Across this great nation, almost everyone has been affected in one way or another by this terrible tomato onslaught. Mrs. Williams, I understand your husband is missing.
Yes,
do you think he's dead?
Will
you miss him?
Well,
will you marry again? What if he's laying in a ditch somewhere, with both his legs broken, calling your name? You will have to find another man, you know. You're no spring chicken. What are you going to do, Mrs. Williams? Can you answer my question? Please look into the camera, Mrs. Williams.